right, welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Debbie Rowley.
You're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Debbie, we got so much stuff going on here.
Yeah.
All good, but it's a bunch.
Yes.
So tonight, tell your quilting friends, we're going to Sydney, Australia with April for our monthly tour of the exhibition. And this one is Toward Abstraction, an exhibition of modern quilts. And if you follow the Gallery 76 at all, you've seen already some of the quilts, and it's pretty amazing work. So quilts tonight with April. Tell your quilting friends. They'll enjoy it and get to see, I'm sure, some stuff they'll not see anywhere else. So do that. And then right next Wednesday, we're coming right back and going to Sydney again next Wednesday for Enchanting Silk, Traditional Chinese and Art Embroidery with Margaret Lee. And I did a show, I think it was a year and a half ago, with Margaret Lee. Amazing, amazing Chinese-Japanese embroidery, both Chinese and Japanese embroidery artist. Just an amazing talent. And she will be with us for the tour. So you know, we're getting it right from the artist. So that's going to be fantastic. And then on the 9th, Wednesday the 9th, no show and no podcast. Because,
Carrie, why is that?
Well, yeah, because the movers are collecting our house on the 7th and delivering it the morning of the 9th in the St. Louis area. And ain't no way I can do a show.
I think Marga would kill you.
I don't think there's a think to that. I think that's a guarantee.
Yes. So she's yeah, a lovely so person, and she's really easygoing, but she's not going to be that easygoing.
No, it'll be a little tense.
Yes.
Yeah. So no Fiber Talk on Wednesday the 9th. Sorry, just cooler heads must prevail. So that will not be. But then we'll be back on the 16th. Carrie Noss is going to demonstrate needle lacing for us on the 16th for the Stitch Hour. So we'll get to see a different kind of needlework there. So cool. 2 weeks in Sydney, a week off, and then Carrie Noss to do needle lacing. And then, of course, we have the solitary stitcher Amanda Rowe provided that Mary Jane Fry chart. You can still download that for free, wetalkfiber.com/MJF1861. And kits at Sassy Jack's MJF 1861 kit. Then also Spring Hill at wetalkfiber.com/springhill will take you to Needle in a Haystack where you can get those kits. And Jennifer, I think Jennifer is on the bottom third of hers. I have done nothing other than that one thin little vine at the top. And Beth is somewhere in the middle. So, but I'll be on that when I get set up in the new place. And the Summer Hill chart is out. And Kim has those at Sassy Jack's. So if you want to get Summer Hill, if you're doing Spring Hill and want Summer Hill to go with it, Kim has those charts at Sassy Jack's. So ring her up and get one in the mail for you. And then also we have Joanna Cabanoff's Take Wing Quaker sampler that... we have that at Wing, wetalkfiber.com/wing. So all those things are in play. Join us for all of them. We're all working on them at different levels and fun all the way around. Now, Sunday we have Melissa McLeod. This is a different one. Don't normally do these. Melissa McLeod of the Wool and the Floss, and that is a needlepoint shop in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, outside of Detroit. And she owns that shop, and she did a show with us a long time ago. And then Megan Holmes, who owns the Needlepoint Clubhouse, and she bought that a year and a half ago, something like that. So we get to talk with the both of them about the world of owning needlework shops, needlepoint shops, and experiences during the pandemic and so on and so forth. A couple of great ladies really doing some great things with their shops. So that'll be the Sunday kind of show. all needlepoint all the time there. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Excellent.
Yep. That's all we got. You know, that's it. Bored out of our minds.
Yep. Nothing going on.
Yep. And we get to talk about Debbie's got some new charts that you're teaching that we got to talk about, but we'll do that later.
Okay.
Oh man, Fantasia, Debbie.
Oh, you like that one?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So Sunday was Susan Hoekstra, who is the president of the National Embroidery Teachers Association. And you're obviously a member.
Obviously, yes. Yeah. I was the president before Susan.
Yes, yes. And great conversation. Now, see, you know, you and I have talked 100 times, and we mentioned it. I know we have.
Right, yes.
But never really sunk in until I had to do research for that show. Holy smokes, what an incredible resource that is. I just never realized.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's a wonderful resource for people who want a teacher, for shops that want a teacher, for guilds and chapters that want a teacher. And I like that the website is divided so you can search on a teacher's name. But if you don't know a name, you want to find a technique, you can find the teachers that teach that technique. And if you want somebody in your area, you can search by area. And so, yeah, tremendous.
Yeah, that. And I did not realize, and of course gushed over that on the Sunday show, did not realize how many techniques.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know, like you were involved, so I figured, well, it was primarily needlepoint, but not even close.
Oh, no, not even close.
No. And now, and the other thing that, because you offer, because online courses now, like you and several others are now offering them, and so that expands what that group can offer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
Yep.
Yeah, so check that out, Sunday show. Check that out with Susan Hoekstra, and definitely go to that site, National Embroidery Teachers. What is it? I didn't write it down. What is it?
National Embroidery Teachers Association, but the website is embroideryteachers.com.
There, yes. And because that's, you know, you look at it, well, all right, my organization can find a teacher there, but also you can find teachers who are doing a technique you're interested in, hunt them down, see if they're teaching somewhere, goes to class, or if they're doing something at a seminar or a regional meeting or something, maybe you can attend. So it's you think, oh, teachers, all right, that's just for people who are signing up teachers to do classes. No, it's really a valuable
tool. It's really for everybody, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can see, you know, examples of their work. Because they have pictures of their work on their each page. Each teacher has a page, and the teachers can put the pictures that they want on their page. So you can see their current teaching projects or kinds of things that they teach that you may not be aware of.
Yeah. No, one of those hidden gem resources that if Susan hadn't contacted me, I'd have just gone on with my perception of what it was, which was completely wrong. So, yeah. How many, is that something that grows? I mean, do we have people looking to be part of the organization a lot, or is it a recruit thing, or it happens over time? How does that work?
I don't know that outside of the national seminars, I don't know that people are aware of it. I joined NEDA way, way back when I went to my first seminar in 2005. And I wasn't a teacher at that point. I had kind of in mind I might like to be a teacher, but didn't know anything about it. But at the seminars, on the calendar of events, they have listed NEDA meeting. And it's open to anybody who is interested in becoming a teacher. You can just go and show up and decide, yes, this is an organization I want to be a part of, or no, it's not. But you could go and participate and just see what happens at the meetings. And so that's why I joined in 2005, because I had it. I wasn't a teacher yet, but I had it in mind that I wanted to be. And so I joined, and I've been a member ever since. So outside of the seminars, you know, we only had meetings at EGA and AG national seminars. And outside of the seminars, I'm not sure how people would be aware of you or find you or things like that.
Yeah. And you don't have, if you want to teach, you don't have to be certified. We talked about that with Susan. You don't have to have an official certification from ANG or EGA. Yeah, you can.
Right. Yes. I'm not certified. So, you know, you don't have to have a certification. You just have to be actively involved in the teaching of embroidery. And that actively involved in could be, you know, I teach classes at the local shop.
Right. Right. Yeah. And you think, oh, if I'm going to be in an association like that, I should have a certification. Well, Debbie's been doing classes for forever without a certification, and it's working out just fine. So
working out just fine, yes.
Yeah, because that, you know, some people would like to teach, and it would give them a way to get connected. And
well, yes, and so you know, NETA is more of a resource, but ANG, EGA, and NAN all offer certification classes where you can learn about the business of teaching.
Right. Yeah, and that NAN, you know, that's it irritates me, because living here in the Chicago area, I should have gone to at least one of their events, because they're held in Michigan, so it's a six-hour drive.
Right.
And, I mean, that's a great organization from what I've picked up on.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have, because that's, their thing is every, well, it's every year in north of Detroit somewhere, I forget, but...
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they have a really great program, and
yeah, they do.
It's worth going to. Yeah, have you ever taught at that?
No,
no,
I haven't, and I haven't been. But you know, Dawn Donnelly is a friend of mine, and she is very involved in NAN with the. I think that she's currently the one that is selecting classes for the next assembly. And so, but you know, she's a wonderful teacher and excellent resource.
Yeah.
All things NAN.
Yeah. Cause you know, people get locked in on EGA and ANG, but that, you know, that's another large organization that has a very good, annual event.
Yes.
And, well worth attending from all reports. I mean, the people I've talked to who have gone have just raved about it. And,
exactly.
Yeah, really well done. So, yeah, when we're able to travel, which is kind of coming up soon.
Yes, I sincerely hope so.
Yeah, then those things will come back into play. But that's the, I was talking with somebody the other day about my paying job and all the traveling that I was doing for that. And they asked, you know, how many, you know, am I going to go back to that? And my first answer was, I hope not. But
yeah, probably not.
But even that, for in the, you know, in the manufacturing world, the magazine that I edit, they have to plan those so far ahead that I don't think there's anything set up for the remainder of this year of normal events that I would attend, because they're so large and you have to commit so far ahead. And because it isn't just hotel rooms, it's ballrooms and food.
Exhibit
and,
space.
Yeah. So
all the things.
Yeah. Now, we're supposed to learn here in the next few days if EGA is going to be live.
Right.
And is ANG, what did they decide?
They're virtual this year again.
They did. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's a, it's a tough spot, because you have
it
to
is.
Decide so far ahead, and you have to guess. And
yes. Are people going to be traveling? Are they not going to be traveling? And, you know, we really don't know. And what kind of restrictions are there going to be at the venue? We really don't know, because that's a fluid situation. So yeah, ANG went ahead and made the call to do virtual again this year. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. There's some real pluses from a teacher perspective for that.
Yeah.
But and we've talked about this with different people at different times. I hope that both of them will continue with a hybrid.
Oh, I do too. Now, EGA has not done virtual.
Right.
You know, last year they were supposed to be in Boston and they just canceled.
Right.
And so they're really, their fervent desire is to be in person in Chicago in September.
Yes.
And, you know, they're, if it's at all possible, that's what we're going to do. But I'm not the one who makes the decision. I'm really kind of glad about that. You know, I just want to teach my classes in whatever format they need to be taught. And we're good.
Yeah.
If we're in Chicago, great. If we're virtual, great. It'll be fine either way for me.
Well, yeah, that's just it. You're set up now, so it doesn't matter.
Right, doesn't matter.
And as are a lot of other teachers.
Yes.
I'm sure that to all of them, it's so what, whatever. But, I mean, the personal thing is the opportunity to get together and
well, and there's so many other things involved with seminar besides just the classes. There's teacher showcase where everybody gets to meet teachers and possibly hire teachers for future events at their local place. There's a merchandise market where you can go and buy all kinds of stuff. There's meetings, there's lectures, there's, you know, just the social interaction with people. There's, you could be busy 20 hours a day at seminar.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't get that online, but
no,
but you know, it, as we've discussed, the online allows so many people who could not travel to Chicago to participate. And that's huge.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So we'll see what ANG or EGA does. Because that's just it. They have to plan so far ahead.
Yeah.
And, we'll just have to see. I don't envy anybody on those committees.
Me either. Because a lot of times if you cancel, you have huge penalties that you have to pay to the venue. Yikes.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. That regular people who attend, if you've not been involved in that kind of stuff, you don't realize the thousands of dollars of commitment you have to make for an event like that.
Yeah.
And,
you have to guarantee you're going to sell so many hotel rooms and you're going to have so much in food and beverage and you're going to have so much in meeting space. And it's a huge number.
And if you don't use all those facilities, the hotel just wants their money. That's not their problem.
Yeah. Whether you use it or not, they're going to get paid.
Yep. Because you signed up for it and they couldn't sell it to someone else.
Yes.
So,
yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Tough toenails. Cut me a check. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But that's just, you know, and then those people on those committees, you know, especially in situations like this, no matter what you decide, you're going to irritate someone. And,
exactly.
I mean, there's no somebody's winning.
Somebody's going to be unhappy.
Yeah. So, yeah, don't envy them. Yep.
Yeah.
I hope EGA's live because we're planning to be there and do shows from it. So
yay.
Yeah, I really want to do that because you're teaching there.
Yes.
And then Beth and Jennifer are going to go, if we can get everything. We're still working on it, but that's the plan right now is to have that all happen. So the entire Fiber Talk Army will be there, and I really want to do that, but not if we have restrictions.
It'd be a little hard to do it virtually.
that's a question. Yeah, to do this virtually, what would you do? And I'm not sure.
I'm not sure how you'd do it either.
I don't know. Problem for another time. I hope we don't have. Yeah. So
yes.
Yep. Well, there it is, folks. The NETA. I want to say NETA because there's in the manufacturing world, there's a NETA organization, Electrical Training or Something Association. So, but it's NETA.
NETA. Yes. Yep.
So check that out Sunday. And check out that website. I mean, that website is one you want to make a note of and keep track of because if you're looking for classes or want to learn a new technique, well, that's where I'd start. Yep. So, all right. So at the EGA seminar, what you're teaching one class?
Yes, one class, a 4-day class.
Hmm. Hmm. And that's the symphony design?
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, that's with most teachers, now, like that's not available retail. So you got to take the class,
no.
Right?
Yeah, you have to have it. It's only offered as a class in a class situation.
Right. And that's the commitment you guys have to make for these national seminars anyway.
Yes.
Yes,
it has to be a new project previously untaught unless it's an encore project, which is more, you know, we had 40 people that wanted to take it the first time it was offered and they all couldn't get in. And so you can offer a class like that again as an encore.
Yeah.
But, you know, to encourage people to attend seminar, they want exclusive new designs. And I understand that.
Right. Oh, sure. Yeah. They got to have something unique to offer. Yeah.
Exactly.
And then that's hell. Because I know people wonder, they'll see like your new designs, they'll see them and say, well, why can't I buy this? Why can't I go to my shop and buy it? And it's because they're locked up. If you're teaching them, they're locked up. And for a period of time, you can't do anything even if you wanted to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a contract situation. And, you know, one reason why I hang on to my teaching pieces and keep them as teaching pieces, there's some complexity that's involved. I've developed videos to show how to do the stitches. You know, there's a whole lot of development that goes into these as opposed to a chart.
Right. Right.
Now, you know, I do write extensive instructions for just my charts, and I do stitch a model for just my charts. But, you know, like, let's think about Symphony. I developed Symphony. I stitched an additional colorway, so that's two colorways that I stitched, time that I couldn't work on other things because those had to be stitched. The instructions for Symphony, the book is over 200 pages long. For the instructions, I've created 23 videos for it.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot of development time.
Right. Yeah. that's why I bring it up is people say, well, I saw your new chart and I tried to get it at the store and it's not available.
Yep, not available.
And that's just it. I mean, that's how you teachers make money. That's how you generate revenue. And so you protect those and it's under contract with EGA, so you can't do anything with it retail anyway.
Right.
And but even after that, you teach the class. You've made all this investment, and you teach the class. And so that's where Netta becomes a resource for stitchers, is a way to find out where Symphony is being taught. And if you can ghost the class or if it's nearby and you can sign up for it through a local chapter, then that's the way you get it. And,
right. A teacher friend of mine said you need to teach something 5 or 6 times in order to gain back the time and money that you spent developing the class.
That's the break even, 5 or 6 times.
Wow. At least.
Wow.
At least.
and then you actually start to see some profit.
Yes.
Holy smokes. Yeah. Because that's okay. So that gives me a gauge then. Yeah. Because I've often wondered how long. Because I mean, you guys all pretty much do it the same way. And the question has come to me from time to time: how come I can't get that? Well, because it doesn't work that way.
Well, and you know, EGA requires that classes taught for EGA all have to be piloted. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't get paid a teaching fee for a pilot class.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is, the stitchers are helping me to refine the instructions and to make sure everything is clear and there's ample resources in the kit. And so, you know, it's kind of a beta test.
Right.
And so you have to factor that in too, because I'm currently doing my pilot class for Symphony. I'm doing it virtually with a group in New York. And we've had 3 all-day sessions on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have another one this week, and that'll finish that out. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's another way to get in on these, is if you hear of a pilot class, but there's a commitment you make there.
Yes, and, there is. You have to finish the project.
that's item one.
And you have to provide feedback to the teacher.
Right. Yeah, because that's another aspect that I don't think a lot of people appreciate. Mm-hmm. is the prep, you know, part of the prep work is that pilot class, so that you get yes. feedback from people who are actually stitching it and from right. a group of people, because it's a whole lot better to do that than to just put it out there and test it on the fly. That's not.
Yeah, I've done that, and it can be really embarrassing. I'd much rather have a pilot class.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because that's just it. In a pilot class, and somebody just raises their hand and says, hey, this doesn't make sense here, and then you yeah. look at it in a different light, and oops, yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, or the numbers are incorrect, or you made a big boner grammatical error.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Just like, yeah. holy smokes.
Yeah. Well, and then, if you'd gone and printed hundreds of those, yeah. oh, ouch.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, no, it's interesting process, because you know I'm sure that a lot of people just think, well, you design something, you print it out, and it's good to go, and it's far from that.
No, yeah,
you know, and even if you don't stitch the thing, there's still, you have to go through all of those steps before someone else can stitch it and provide feedback, and mm-hmm. yeah, it's a journey. But 5 or 6 times teaching, and you start to look at breaking even.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Cost of doing business. It's everywhere.
Yep. Yes, it is. And, you know, if you're going to approach teaching as a business, you have to take all of the business things into account. What's my return going to be on this investment?
Yeah. 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 And time. Oh, it's got to be hard to factor time in.
Yeah, it is. You know, I figure I make about 15 cents an hour, so.
Yeah. But isn't that true for needlework all the time? I'll never forget, I was stitching on a flight home from Europe, and one of the flight attendants came up. Oh, that's beautiful. Do you ever sell your work?
No.
And I just looked up her and I said, you couldn't afford it.
Nope, couldn't afford it.
No. Because you
even
you,
at you minimum know. Wage,
right? Yeah, you
the
can.
The number of hours that are factored into this is just incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, how much would you pay for a 200-page instruction book with videos?
Right, right. It'd be a lot.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But yeah, that was, you know, that was just it. And I didn't even flinch. I just looked at it. I said, "You can't afford it." And
can't afford
you know,
it.
I'm
yeah,
I'm sitting there going, I'm an adequate stitcher, but still you can't afford it because I can't make enough money for the hours that go into it.
Well, yeah, it's the hours and hours and yeah. hours that go into it. So, yeah. you know, just the hours required to stitch a project, think of the hours required to design the project. And, you know, like if there's a double fan doubled, then it takes me 3 hours to draw a diagram for a double fan doubled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One diagram, one stitch.
Yep. There's your 15 cents an hour right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep, there it is right there, folks. Yeah. No, it's just an interesting thing, but also something I think people need to appreciate what goes into all these. And it's not just needlepoint. It's all the, you know, all the people that do charts, whether they teach them or not. It's just a lot of work that goes into them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm doing this class. Beth and I are doing this class with Natalie Dupuy on color, because I'm trying to get my head wrapped around and some control over my knowledge of color.
Okay.
And the class is now in its second week, and I'm already behind, but I'll catch up after we move, he said. is a color wheel part of your arsenal, or does your mind just work such that you really don't need that?
Well, yes, yes and no. So I think that a color wheel is a very useful tool that every stitcher should have, because you need to understand the relationship between colors. And a color wheel is a universal thing that, will help you understand why this color works with this color, but it doesn't work with that color. Now, that being said, I don't use it all that much.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I'm guided more by what colors do I like. My theory is that every color will go with every color as long as you have the appropriate hues of color.
Okay.
Okay, so, you know, because you can have an analogous color scheme, that's colors that are beside each other on the color wheel. You can have complementary, you can have triad, you can have, you know, monochromatic. There's any number of color schemes that you can have. And so when you're thinking about developing a color scheme, I think that you should first start with colors that you like, that make you happy. And so one thing that I advise people is, do you have a dress or a shirt or, you know, bedspread or curtains that you just really, every time you look at it, it just makes you feel happy or makes you feel good? You can base a color scheme off of that because somebody else has already done the work on that color scheme.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the manufacturer and the artist that came up with the fabric has already done that work.
Yeah.
Another thing you can do is to look at color combinations in overdyed threads. Here again, somebody else has already done the work. And you just find things that make you happy. That, because if you don't like the colors, you're not going to stitch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's a reality, yes.
That's it, because you'll have to force yourself. You know, with me, it's yellow. I have to just really... struggle every time I have to stitch with yellow or do yellow, and I do, but I just, you know, I put off stitching. I don't want to stitch because I know the next thing I'm stitching with is going to be yellow, and I just have to just get it over with.
So that color really grates on, because, and we've talked about how, yeah, that's not your does. Favorite color, but it really grates on you that much.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it does. It really does.
Huh. Well, I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, green is not my favorite color by a long shot.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is because of red-green color blindness, and I just yeah. struggle with it. But,
right.
Yeah, I don't enjoy green things. I'll do them.
Yeah.
You know, it's not offensive to me, but, you know, I just do them blindly and get them over with.
Right.
But so, yeah, yellow, you know. So even though you've done some yellow designs,
yes.
It still grates you. Okay, that's good.
Yes. Those were the hardest things for me to stitch. And the colors that I like the most, blues, greens, and purples, they're analogous colors on the color wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the cool colors much more so than the warm colors, which are red, yellow, and orange. And so that's just... what appeals to me, what I'm comfortable in, what makes me feel happy. You know, when I teach, I try to wear clothes that I feel happy in so that I'll have a real positive frame of mind. I don't want to wear something that, you know, and everybody has things that are in your wardrobe that you bought because you thought you might like it, and then you get home and you don't like it.
Yep.
The sleeves are too tight, or it's not quite long enough, or the collar rubs on you, or something. And you'll wear those clothes if everything else is dirty.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, or I really have to wear short sleeves today, and that's the only short sleeve thing that's clean, so that's what I have to wear. And it puts you in the frame of mind all day long of not quite on your game, not quite engaged.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody also has things that every time you wear that particular shirt, that dress, that T-shirt, that pair of pants, you just feel happy in them. And you feel like, I can do anything I want to do today. I have a very positive outlook, a very positive frame of mind. That's the same with what we stitch with.
Yep. That's interesting. Yeah. Because now, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, because I have some clothes that I've had forever. And, you know,
yes.
I'll wear them and the kids go, you know.
Why are you wearing that again?
Yeah, shouldn't you just get rid of that? And I don't. I hang on to stuff. that, you know, that I like until I literally can't wear it anymore because it's threadbare or whatever. And I don't care.
Or it has a big hole in it that you can't repair.
Right. But yeah.
You feel good
when
you wear it. And it's a nebulous thing that may or may not be hard to define, to put your finger on, but you feel good when you wear that particular thing. And it doesn't matter if anybody else likes it or not.
Yep. Oh, it's true. Yeah. Well, it's like with my new studio, Mark and I were talking about that. And because I have to put up acoustic panels.
Right.
And we were talking about painting the walls. And so she was suggesting a light gray and then gray panels. And I said, no, they're going to be blue panels. Because blue is the color that, just like that, that's the color that makes me comfortable and works for me. It always has and always will. And I said, no, those panels are going to be blue. Because that's what I want my environment to be when I'm doing magazine work or podcasts or whatever, stitching, you know, when I'm stitching. I want that in my environment. And because I'd been through the panel, the color selections, thinking, oh, I should get this or I should get that. And the little voice in the back of the head is saying, no, you, it's same kind of thing. You bought that yellow shirt a long time ago and wore it once and just felt, you know, I just feel nervous.
Yes, and, on edge.
Yeah.
Not quite right.
Yep.
But yes, you know, when we were finishing out this house, I was going to go for white kitchen cabinets. And we had been in a showroom where we were picking out our granite for the countertops, and they had blue cabinets. And I thought about those, and I thought about snow, resale value, blah, blah, blah. And Rod said, blue makes you happy. Get blue cabinets. Have them painted blue. So we did.
Uh-huh. And you're glad you did.
Glad I did. I love being in my kitchen. I love working in my kitchen. And, you know, when I see a yellow kitchen, I just thought, ugh, I could never work in there. It just wouldn't work for me.
Yeah.
But this my kitchen makes me happy. I have blue cabinets. And everybody who walks in goes, oh, wow, those cabinets are blue. Yes, they are.
Yep. And you don't have to cook here, and I do, and that's the way it's going to be.
That's right. And they're about a DMC 931 if you want a reference for a color.
There you have it. Yep. Well, that's, you know, having done a lot of real estate lately, you know, that whole resale value thing comes up.
Yes.
And all the time. And you think about that in your house. But at some point, you just have to say, look, who's going to live here every day for X number of years?
Exactly.
And why should I decorate for the next person?
Let them do their own decorating. Yeah. And, you know, Rod pointed out, he said, you know, 10, 15 years, we'll probably have to repaint the cabinets anyway.
Good point. Yeah. Yep.
So just get them blue. Paint them the color you want them.
Yep.
And I did. And we're happy. We're both happy about it. And his favorite color is red. So,
You know,
that's the color he likes. Mm-hmm. And his truck is red. Mine is blue, you know.
So yep.
You get the color that you like.
Well, if you paint all the door trims white, you've got yourself an all-American home there. That's a nice touch. Okay.
There you go. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and we painted all the walls gray because if I want to change the accent colors, the color of the furniture or whatever, gray goes with everything.
Yes. Yep. So you're safe. It gives you freedom.
Gives me freedom. We're good.
Yeah. And so it's interesting, this color thing, and that's why I wanted to take this class with Natalie, it just permeates everything we do, and I don't have a good grasp of it.
Yeah.
And like when I see one of your designs and how you put the colors together, and then my first thought is, okay, how did she figure that out? And because I just don't have that skill. And I want to develop that skills at least a fundamental level, you know, because I'll never be top flight. I've got red green color blindness working against me, and at one point, but I won't. I don't have that. And like you or Gayanne Rogers, when she talks about color, holy smokes, that's just frightening what she can do with color. And, you know, and like your Fantasia, your one that you're teaching at A&G, I just, first time I saw that, it's like, holy smokes, how'd you figure all that out? And, you know, it just pops. It's just a beautiful thing. And, yeah, so that, I, to me, because it does permeate, and like, I mean, I blindly go through life. I mean, Marga's the interior decorator. I have essentially no say. And anytime I do have say, it's just so far wrong that it's pointless.
It's like, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, exactly. No, we're not doing that. You know, and for her, it just comes naturally.
Right.
I'm always amazed at that, that people can just sit down. That's why I asked if you used a color wheel much. And it sounds like you don't very much, because after years and years, it's just kind of part of what you do.
Yeah. Yeah, I can picture it very clearly in my mind, so I don't need to pull out the actual color wheel, although I've got two or three of them around of varying sizes.
Yeah, yeah. Is that when you select a color scheme for a piece, is that something where you take what you think the threads will be, lay them out on a table, and let them sit there for a few days while you pass by them, or do you adjust on the fly? How do you go about that?
Well, I don't let anything sit for two or three days, very long, because I don't have time for that. But, and you know, I've said before, I design everything in black.
Mm-hmm.
And add the color later. I very seldom start off with a color scheme in mind. Now, when I'm getting ready to stitch a piece, I will pull every thread that I have here that is in colors that I think may or may not work, and every texture I can think of, and they all go into my stitching bag.
Mm-hmm.
And then I work with them as I'm stitching.
Okay. Hmm. So it's on, basically on the fly then?
Basically.
Yeah.
Yep, basically on the fly. Hmm. I was going to say, at EGA National this year, I'm actually been asked to do a lecture on color and choosing colors. And not because I'm an expert on it, but what I encourage all of my students to do is to change colors in my designs if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with them to do that. And so that's what my lecture is going to be about. How to change colors with counted canvas piece. And, you know, there are some things that we will discuss. If y'all are there, I think it's free.
Oh, there we go. All right.
And, you know, so y'all can come. But it's part of the Winning Ways series that EGA has.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said, I'm not like Jennifer Reifenberg, who has an art degree and is an artist, you know, and, you know, because I don't have an art degree. I just know what colors make me happy and how to put colors that make me happy together to stitch with.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, see, that's the other thing is there are people like Jennifer who is an absolute true artist. No question.
Oh, yes. No. Have you seen her paintings? Yes. Yeah. She's an artist.
I love when she puts up a new painting.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I do too.
But see, you know, there's people like her who are these trained, highly skilled artists. But then there's also an equal number of people like you.
Yes.
Who just know. You can just tell. And I'm not sure which one impresses me more, because to be able to just sit down with a bunch of threads and start putting something together and just know, and then to adjust off of that. And that's where I really, ultimately, if I can get some grasp of color, that's really my goal, is exactly that, to be able to pick up a piece mm-hmm. and a design and say, all right, now, I'm not a big fan of these two colors here, but what am I going to replace them with, as opposed to gritting my teeth and stitching them?
Right.
You know.
Yeah, because, you know, and designers don't always get it right either.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just because I had a harebrained notion and put something out doesn't mean that it's good.
Well, but, and that's, that's another factor. We tend to, if the designer put it out, we tend to accept it as gospel. And yeah. It may or may not be. And if you don't like it, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter if you don't like it.
I often wonder how many designs people liked and then didn't stitch because they didn't like the colors that were on the cover. And for me, that's happened more than once where, oh, I really like that, but I can't stand those colors, and I would have to enlist somebody to help me, which right. You know, makes, I don't know. And see, sometimes I think, well, if I enlist somebody to help me, then really I'm doing the colors they like. So I want to get a grasp so I can say, all right, I really like this design and I want to do it in reds. And I know enough about it that I can at least figure out most of it to make a conversion. And because I just think I'm sure there's a lot of people that have just passed on designs because they just didn't know what to do with the colors because they didn't like what was there.
Yeah, it happens all the time and probably more than you would think. That, I saw that design and I thought it looked interesting, but I just don't like blue.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, I really don't want to work with purple or, you know, that kind of thing. And when we submit proposals to a selection committee, sometimes they may reject your piece because they've already got, yours was blue and they've already got three blue ones that they have selected. And so they're, you know, it's not like they could say, you know, we really like this design and we think it would be intriguing and interesting for our students. Can you offer it in a different colorway? Which usually I can. That's right. Not a big deal. But they just reject it because, oh, we've already got two or three blue ones and we don't need another one. And so it happens more than you think that something is. But, you know, I also can't put something out that's strictly in black and white.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Because then people would think, oh, that's in black and white, as opposed to, no, I'm going to add the colors later.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, now that's disappointing, too, because then how many times would a design, a good design, have been included in a seminar,
but if was rejected? If it was a different color.
Right. Yeah. So you would think that the automatic reaction would, well, first you'd think that the decision would be made based on the design and the techniques, not the colors. And then if they have three blues, go back to and say, hey, this is really great. We want to include it. Can you do it in red? And yes, absolutely. Give me a couple hours.
Yes, give me a few days and I'll get a red model stitched for you. Yeah. And then you also have to remember that selection committees are made up of people.
Right, right.
Who have visceral reactions to colors.
Yep.
Just like you do.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and that, you know, color, you know, I've offered it many times that when I first learned photography, the wizened master that I learned from said, learn black and white. Because
right.
Color hides and covers up for all kinds of things.
Yes.
And do it in black and white. And when you get that mastered, then you add color, and like I mastered it, but I didn't. But then, you know, but then you can add color and you can do it effectively. And so then it becomes like for yours, design, get the texture and the shapes that you want and the positions you want. And then in comes the color. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's amazing how changing the color will make something look completely different, because we did this with a couple of my chart designs. We did Hot Stuff, and that Hot Stuff was released red, yellow, and orange.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a few years later, we recolored it blue, green, and pink.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks completely different and attracted another audience of people who had completely passed over the red, yellow, and orange because it's not going to go in their house, but they like the blue, green, and pink. Mm-hmm. And we did the same thing with Shenandoah Spring. It was a very analogous color, it was an analogous color scheme, and the hues were very similar to where, and it was blues and greens, very soft. So we recolored it and did it with a higher contrast, maroons and pinks, and it highlighted some of the different design areas that people hadn't really noticed because the colors were blending together.
Uh-huh.
And so it gave that project a new life. So, you know, color, because it's so subjective and visceral and elicits such an emotional response, we have to be cognizant of that when we're deciding what colors to make something.
Yeah. Now there's an experiment. Every year, release a new retail chart that's the same design and just do it in a different color scheme. That would be a fun experiment.
Yeah, what nanosecond of the day am I going to stitch a new model?
Well, yeah, but that, you know, that aside, it would be just be fun to see
Yes.
if the sales would, if you could sustain sales over the course of 4 or 5 years with the same design, just changing the color scheme.
Right. Yeah, you know, and because my students and people who stitch my designs have the freedom to change the colors because I give everyone explicit permission on the back cover of everything I do. Feel free to change the colors. A lot of times they will, and they'll send me pictures. So, like American Beauty, which was my big rose that I've done, I've seen that in yellows, I've seen it in whites, I've seen it in pinks, I've seen it lavenders, I've seen it, I don't know that I've seen it in orange, but you know. Peace roses that are yellow with pink on the tips. I think somebody did it like that. And, you know, and they send me their pictures and I gush over all of them because they're all gorgeous. And isn't that beautiful? And it's still a rose.
Yeah. No, that would be a fun experiment. Yeah. Because I bet you could sustain, I bet you could. I bet you could sustain a decent amount of sales just by doing the different colors. Because, yeah, just all you'd have to do is change the cover and, of course, you'd have to have them stitched, but change the cover and your chart. And, yeah. That'd be fun to see. Just be fun to see. But more hassle than it's worth, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, you know, it would depend. We are in the process of doing that with a couple of other things.
Yeah. Well, fun to play with. And
Yeah.
I gotta get yeah, I'm just I have to get a better handle on it. And I just kind of feel it's like in the stitching, I feel like I'm at the mercy of others, and I'd like to not be in that position. And that's not, I say that and it sounds like a terrible thing. It's not.
No.
But I just like to have better control.
Yeah. You want to stitch with colors that make you happy or that will fit with your color scheme in your house or that Margo would like, because I know you stitch a lot of things for Margo that Margo would like. And so, you know, you need to be able to change those colors. So, a real simple exercise for you to do is to pull all of the original colors that were suggested and then change out one color only, just one.
Okay.
And you can look and see how is this one color working with the rest of them.
Okay.
And it could be that the color is fine, you have the hue wrong, and so you need to play with the hue a little bit, you know. Okay, so I pulled this red, but it's too yellow, it's too orange red, and I need one that's more blue red. And, you know, just change one color.
Okay.
And if you lay them out with the other colors that are already selected, you can see how they're going to work together and how they're going to play with each other, because sometimes they play nicely together and sometimes they don't. But it's just a matter of finding the appropriate hue that will work with the other colors in the piece.
Yeah. All right. That's worth a try. No harm there. No harm there. Can do it. Yeah. No, it's just kind of one of my missions is I just want to get a better grasp. So, I'll never be good, but I can at least be adequate.
Well, and you know, unless you're stitching for other people, you don't have to be good. You have to please yourself.
Yes. And I love that. Stitch something that fits in this color scheme in the house. That's not my department. No. I just
Right.
stitch them and let Marga sort that out. No thanks. No, I'm out. Here, I finished this one. If you want it, use it. If you don't, it goes in a drawer.
Yeah.
So, yep. All right, I think we better call it there.
Okay.
Okay, so join us tonight. We go to Sydney, Australia to look at quilts, modern quilts, toward abstraction exhibition with April and Sunday, Melissa McLeod and Megan Holmes and Needlepoint Shops and What Life's Like. So that was fun. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.